Guten Abend, meine Damen und Herren. Und ich freue mich, hier in Freiburg wieder zu kommen. Und zuerst bedanke ich mich sehr für die Einladung von Frau Professor Jin und auch besonders von meinem lieben Freund, Herrn Professor Hans-Herbert Gander. Wir waren zusammensessen vor unserer Doktorvater von mehr als 4 Jahren damals. Aber das ich gerade gesagt habe, ich habe in Freiburg über Philosophie, über Heidegger promoviert, aber so ist es lange, lange her. Und ich habe Hans-Herbert fast über 40 Jahre kennengelernt. So ich bin sehr froh, dass ich wieder zu kommen und ein Thema damals bin ich nicht so gewusst, aber dieses Thema, wie heute und auch nächstes Montag, gehört zusammen. Ich möchte über den sogenannten Liebe, aber Liebe werde ich gesagt, das ist nicht wie so in der westlichen Bedeutung und auch Sexualität, auch nicht wie die westliche so bestimmt. So diese beiden Themen werde ich heute und nächstes Montag besprechen. Aber leider, ich habe mehr Angst über auf Deutsch zu sprechen. Ich habe viel Deutsch verlangt. Deswegen werde ich in diesem Vortrag nur auf Englisch zu sprechen. Verzeihung. Maybe I'll come back to English because I think I have forgot a lot of German. If I come back more time, maybe more than two months, my German come back again. But I come back here on lectures, I'm some afraid that my German is not good enough. But I think that you understand me then in my sense. So actually, the theme that I want to talk to you about love and sex is come from the last days when I left Freiburg. I bought this series, a book, in Wombach Center in 1982. And there's a series about so-called about the love and sex in the us and the more. This is the French original and then translated in English. But this book, of course, look at the pictures. You know, that is all about so-called erotic pictures. But one particular book, the title page, just struck me. There's this. This the book that I thought is impossible. Okay, maybe you have seen Perhaps the ladies may not be saying that you have seen this, but probably we have seen a lot of so-called pornographic erotic pictures in the West or those also in other culture like India. But never, first person is, never have I seen any other erotic pictures with children within the picture. So if this picture, I think that, and then I bought this book in 1982. They always come to my mind. I try to find out why this is the case. Of course, okay, this is a pornography. But even though this is on the picture, the area, the position is, you know, it's not a kind of normal, so-called missionary's position, but from the behind and standing. But of course, the interesting thing is there's the child playing in front of probably their parents, making love. And in the end, and after many years, I also found several other pictures that probably this picture, this a painting, should be in the late Ming Dynasty. The other one, probably the Qing Dynasty. Then also finding two couples making love, also with a child playing. So my puzzle is, why in Chinese erotic painting, children are omitted? And I tried to, in the last so many years, I could never find any answer in any theoretical, any papers. So they talk about sex. Okay, this is my first puzzle. And this puzzle will be, I hope that I can make a little comment in next Monday's lecture. This is one painting. But another puzzle. It's right that there is no philosophy of love in Chinese philosophical tradition. Along these lectures, I will talk about, of course, we all know in the West, I remember, I study here in Freiburg. Of course, in Freiburg, there's the great emphasis on the Greek philosophy, Plato, Aristotle. And everyone reading Plato must realize Plato's book on Symposia is one of course, the very first book on love, on Eros. And after Plato, I think up to today's, love is a major theme of philosophical consideration. But if we look at Chinese in the last 2,000 years, you could find no philosophical treatise on love. So what is the case? So why the Western philosophy of love? And there's only the China literature of Qing. Okay, I introduced the word Qing because I'll try to explain to you that in fact there is no corresponding concept of love in Chinese. Not because we don't have loving relation, of course we have. But the use of the concept of love, whether it's in Eros, Philia, Agape, then compare with the Chinese way of saying this, it's different. So I mean I'll try to do that. So interesting is that perhaps you know that there is I come back from the Chinese University of Hong Kong, and you know that the founder of the so-called Neo-Confucianism is Tang Junyi. Tang Junyi is the modern, very important Chinese philosopher. When I look at him, look at the work, there's one interesting, very interesting book, because he died after a year after I come to Freiburg. There's a book called Aiqing Di Fu Yin, they call it The Gospel of Love. Interesting is, this book is published in 1945, and it's cited, and since then there's more than 20 editions. And when you look at the book, interesting enough is that the author, he said it's called what's called Kieloski, and Tang Junyi was the translator. And interesting, when look at the preface on the 1940, Tang wrote a preface, and the preface is a very interesting story. Is that it's a kind of fabrication that how he discovered this book called The Gospel of Love in Chongqing, in Antiquariat. And in this story, he's saying that, well, he discovered a book and it's all dusted and called the Secret of Love. And pick it up and say that the author is a certain Polish called Kieloski. And it was translated in English called by a man called John Bailey. And he found this interesting and he began to translate the book. And saying that the originator of this book has 8 chapters, and during the war he lost the last 3, and then there's only 5 chapters, and they only published it 5 chapters in 1949. But when I look at the all encyclopedia, I could not find any man called Kieloski and any man called John Bailey. The whole story of finding the book, trying the book, is fabricated by him. Tang. So the problem is, why a Chinese philosopher writing a book on love should hide away and making him as a kind of translator? Why is the case? So probably it's not like a puzzle. You look at the tradition, in Chinese tradition and Western tradition, and one, or you know that in Western tradition, love is an important theme. But why there's no love philosophy in Chinese? And even a very famous Chinese philosopher called Tang, before his death, someone asked him whether he wrote the book. He smiled, never answered. Until after his death, actually, and I wrote a paper, actually I researched on the paper, and proving that he was indeed the author and not translator. So this become a very good, interesting puzzle. Why? Chinese philosopher never wrote on something on love. And that's I also want to answer in this case. But of course, no philosopher could treatise on love and change in the entire history of Chinese philosophy. And until now, lecturing on philosophy of love is not a usual theme of my colleagues in Hong Kong, nor in China, nor in Taiwan. And apparently, if a Chinese philosopher professor trying to lecture on love, he's somewhat not proper. Love is not a proper theme. So why is the case? I mean, to make it an interesting problem, so maybe this is why I think that these two lectures may catch you a kind of curiosity. Why is the case? So, I want to start the paper, and not by the very philosophical analysis, but I try to look on to some very common understanding. And I start to do this paper on comparing two important stories. There's one on the one side, Romeo and Juliet, and the other side, the Butterfly Lovers. And I start with one a quotation. It's from the French called Denis de Waterman. He said, any kind of romanticism, of idealization, a quasi-mystical order is excluded. Love, such as we, that is a Westerner, uncertainly since our 12th century, does not even have a name in the language. In Chinese, the nearest approach to the verb to love is a word which denotes the relationship between the mother and the son. From the viewpoint of the idea of love, there are really two worlds, the Oriental and Occidental. So this man, of course, some 40 years ago, wrote this article and saying that he found out that there is no comparison between the Western idea of love and the Chinese, and of course, I explained, virtually, there's no philosophy of love. Of course, it doesn't mean that Chinese does not think on love, but from this angle. So his answer is, so the purpose of this paper is to evaluate critically the claim of the Duan Chuan that there is no agreement on the meaning of love between the Chinese and the West. And further, that the idea of romantic love is totally absent in Chinese culture. I tend to agree with him in general that the metaphysical and theological approaches in the Western articulation of the problem of love in terms of eros, philia, agape are foreign to the Chinese mind. The idea of love in the Chinese culture is understanding qing, which I think has a completely different meaning, horizon, mean horizon, from the Western conception of love. However, the Wu Chuan is apparently ignorant of the complexity and richness of love, of the concept of love. His reference to the above quotation to the closest equivalent word of love in the Chinese language to that of Western tradition is obscure. He has merely made an assertion without going into the Chinese philosophy and literature to illustrate his point. Perhaps his alleged ignorance should not be blamed compared with the vast Western philosophical tradition on the problem and the nature of love. Just virtually very little said in Chinese culture on this topic. There was no symposium written by classical Chinese Plato, nor anything similar to three volumes of Nature of Love by the contemporary Chinese scholar like Ivan Singer. For the Chinese intellectual, past or present, qing is not a proper subject matter to be thematized. However, amorous relationships are human phenomena with the obvious and taken for granted in all cultures. The difference lies only in understanding and interpretation of this phenomena according to the particular cultural category of meaning. The eros philia agape schema denotes the hermeneutic horizon from which a human relation called love is being conceptualized and understood in the Western tradition. Ivan Singer, agreeing with the Wuchman, argued for the uniqueness of the West because the two cultural roots of the West, namely the Greek and the Christian, determine the reference and meaning of all discourse on love. For the Eros tradition, he said, in ancient Eastern philosophy, Hinduism, Buddhism, Confucianism, Taoism, Zen, the Eros tradition scarcely existed. Correspondingly, the East did not develop the concept of love in ways that are comparable to those of the West. On the other hand, religious love is so unique. Singer further comments, religious love is mainly a product of the Judeo-Christian tradition. The 2,000 years of Christian theology and philosophy consists of one attempt after another to understand and render amenable to worship a love that may be God. The Greek concept of love as eros and the Christian idea of love as agape belongs clearly to this Western tradition. When Dietrich and Singer assert that romantic love is an invention of the West, it is because romantic love cannot be understood without the reference to both the Greek eros and the Christian agape. Our present globalized world, however, does not consider isolated cultures. Western cultural traditions have been eroded by enormous forces of westernization. At the same time, all other civilizations was confronted by the challenge of the process of Western modernization. Consequently, the whole world is being transformed. History has been changed by the West. We have been made the world one world, said English historian J.M. Roberts in The Triumph of the West. The result is a gradual adoption, sometimes unconsciously, sometimes with bitter struggle, of Western ideology, where you stand up and insert almost all Western culture into one's own. We take for granted the idea of political and economic freedom, human rights, government, science and technology, as well as the standard of living condition, entertainment, etc. We are all the Western origin, as if they were indigenous in our own culture. In fact, our generation is born into this predicament. We are both Chinese and Western. The stock of knowledge in our everyday life world, using Alfred Schultz's phenomenological terminology, is built on the sedimentation of the cross-fertilization of Chinese and Western culture in the last 150 years. If this is the case, then there is no sense in talking to a pure Chinese cultural tradition, because the Western tradition is also our tradition. So let's come back to our major problem concerning the idea of love. It's indeed true to say that in the past, there are two different traditions of the idea of love in the West and in the East. There was no Western romantic love in China. But this assertion has lost its validity in the contemporary China, at least in Hong Kong. The popular media culture showed that perhaps romantic love is the best and most welcome commodities. Even our vocabulary and the concern of love have changed drastically without our awareness. Less than 100 years ago, the location, "I love you," which is the most common today, did not exist in any Chinese text, and definitely no Chinese would utter such a sentence to her lover. I've been teaching the philosophy of love in our university for a number of years, and I always try to challenge my students, and I try to ask them, whoever, find these three words, 我爱你, 我爱你, in any Chinese text before 1900, I pay him or her $5,000. Up till now, no one gets a dollar. Because I'm that sure that this "I love you" is a totally modern Western way of saying. No Chinese lover before 1900 would say to his lover, "I love you, please love me." Never. So this interesting part. We take for granted that "I love you" is so, everybody say that, even mother, father to child, the WhatsApp and say, "I love your daughter." I don't think any father or mother before 1900 would say to his children, "I love you." Never. This is cultural difference. So I consider a comparative study of the idea of love between the Chinese and Western tradition is more than our academic interest. It is our existential concern to uncover the radical meaning of love embedded in our present consciousness. What we mean by romantic love is the product of a cross-fertilization of two originally incommensurable traditions of love. To illustrate this, I chose Shakespeare, Romeo and Juliet, as an obvious example of romantic love, which is at the same time one of the most well-known romantic plays to modern Chinese. Compared with the Chinese legendary story of Lang Zhu, or butterfly, or better known as butterfly flowers, whose love is considered as equally romantic by most Chinese today. I would like to demonstrate that the Lang Zhu legend contained nothing romantic. There's no passion nor struggle in the story. Two legends contain nothing romantic. There's no passion nor struggle in the story. Two important characteristics of passionate and romantic love in Western tradition, the Lebenstod motif and transgressional love are absent. I contend that the contemporary conception of Lanzhu has undergone the process of romanticization. The aim of this paper is to understand the process and at the same time to contrast the meaning of love in both traditions. Perhaps, can you help me? I want to show the, my friends two the interesting the excerpts. Go out and we have two little video to play. Okay, and then this one. This one and this one. Okay.
Huh?
没声音吗?
啊,
声音, 哦, 没有声音的?
啊,
这个应该, 有没有声音的? 哎, 有吗?
等一下, 这个,
这个, 啊, 这个, 啊, 我去请, 知道, 开玩笑。 Because I would like to show you the, a very simple 3 minutes the trailer on the, this kind of romantic love. And then, of course, by one of my favorite, the Romeo and Juliet theme, what is love? And then also the theme song of this butterfly lover. And you will see the contrast. And why I apparently that so many people think that the any? The male scene? No? You turn on the lights, then it more easier.
那个。 可以吗?
You turn off the light. Yeah, good. Okay, another excerpt from the Chinese one. Take away the first one.
Okay.
First one.
这里
继续吧。
Yeah, OK.
OK, I'd just like you to look at the two extracts and then to just to revive your kind of romantic ideas, whether in them, in Romeo and Juliet and also the butterfly lovers. And in fact, actually, 3 nights ago, I was in Prague and I watched the Czech modern rendition of Romeo and Juliet opera, and saying that, of course, Romeo and Juliet is always the top. That is the film, and then this is the film. So in this in a way, there are certainly many superficial similarities between two stories. A contemporary Chinese scholar, Kong Yin, compared the content of the two love stories and concluded that there are surprising similarities. He enumerated these 5 points. The heroes and heroines met accidentally and fell in love of their free will. There was certain conflict and crisis in the love. There are someone who helped them in the realization of their love. The two pairs of lovers were crushed and destroyed by the reactionary forces. They lived their lives ended tragically. And for the meaning of tragic end of the lover, Holmes glorified the martyrdom and the triumph of humanism over reactionary feudalism. He emphasized the struggle of an individual freedom and equality of free love in both stories. What Liang Zhu tries to demonstrate is a common wish of the people to demand the equality of the sexes as well as the self-determination in marriage. From this anti-feudalistic perspective, he has the same position as compared to Romeo and Juliet. Undoubtedly, Holmes' comparison is an overstatement based on Marxist ideology. A less academic comparison is found in a small, popular book on traditional Chinese love story. Compared with the other traditional love story, Liang Zhu is more complex. The love is more determined and exclusive. In this respect, the love of Liang Zhu is no less inferior to that of Romeo and Juliet. Therefore, Liang Zhu is the most welcome tragedy among all other dramas. The two lovers have set up a model for thousands of young men and women. On the whole, the romantic nature of Liang Zhu is measured against the idea of love in Romeo and Juliet. We should also take note that the comparison is done by contemporary Chinese writers. To my limited knowledge, there is no comparison of Romeo and Juliet to Liang Zhu from any foreign scholars. The romantic stories, the love of Liang Zhu has been further popularized and known to nearly all Chinese through, not only by drama or film, but also by the butterfly lover violin concerto by two Chinese musicians, He Jianhao and Chen Gang, in 1959. The hundreds of performances and thousands of CDs sold are proof of the popularity of the love story in music. It is perhaps the only romantic violin concerto in Western style composed in the mainland China during the communist government. Yet one would not fail to notice the similarity in tone and mood of the butterfly lovers to that of Tchaikovsky's Romeo and Juliet overture. Tchaikovsky, later to say, is one of the major romantic composers of 19th century Western music. In fact, I'd like to, but I don't have time. Otherwise, you can just go to YouTube and you can hear this Romeo and Juliet and also the butterfly lovers of violin concerto. And you'll find out this the kind of music, the romantic music between these two are so similar. So much for similarity. In the following session, I would like to examine firstly the idea of love in the original language story, and secondly the idea of romantic love in Romeo and Juliet. After this exposition, I will consult the two ideas of theories and in the process of romanticization of Liang Zhu. Okay, look at this. As a legend, Liang Zhu has a long story. According to Lu Gong, the editor of Collected Stories and Ballet Stories of Liang Zhu, there was already a reliable source of the story recorded in the Tang Dynasty, that's like the 9th century. Since then, it's appeared in many versions and variations of the original theme. I think the version recorded in Qing Xin Lü Le, literally the classified outline of the history of Qin, edited and written by the important late Ming literary author Feng Menglong, this in 1574 to 1646, to be used in discussion here, because Feng's story is in original form and concise. Most important of all is that Feng classified Liang Zhu under a definite category of love story, Qing Ling. Friend's testimony of love should prove to be most valuable, understanding the Chinese idea of love. Since the story is not a long one, it may be worthwhile to translate it completely for the purpose of a decision. So, Zhou Yingtai, Liang Shangbo and Zhou Yingtai lived in the time of East Qing dynasty, the dynasty after the Han. Liang's family was in Huixi, while Zhou's home was in Shangyu. They studied together for some time. Zhou went home first and was later visited by Liang in Shangyu. Only then did Liang realize that Zhou was female. He went home and told his parents that he would like to marry Zhou. Unfortunately, at that time, Zhou was already betrothed to the young son of the Ma family. Knowing that, Liang was very sad and was at a loss. 3 years had passed before he became official at the Tang Jin. Soon after, he became seriously ill and was going to die. Before he died, he made a wish that he was to be buried at the foot of the Qingdao Mountain. Another year passed, and this was the time for Zhou to leave home for the marriage to the son of the Ma family. The party was stopped by a sudden storm where they passed the Qingdao Mountain. Then Zhou visited Liang's grave and wept sorrowfully. The grave opened suddenly, and Zhou threw herself into the grave and died. Having heard of the incident, the Ma family reported it to the emperor's court. Minister Zian requested the emperor to ordain Zhou as a chaste lady in the time of the emperor Qi. Liang manifested himself spiritually to serve the people. Because of this, he was ordained chaste loyalty. This story was recorded and inscribed at the Qin Temple. It was also recorded in annals of Ningbo. The butterflies in Wusong were transformed from orange larva. Women and children called the yellow butterflies at Liang Shangbo and the black one at Zhou Yingtai. According to legend, the Zhou family visited the grave after the Zhou died and buried clothes in front of it. From the flames of the burning clothes appears a pair of butterflies. It was believed that such a tale was created by some concerned person. Okay. For the modern reader who believes the romantic version of Lan Zhou's story, the original is an anti-climax. There is no rebellious struggle of the lover to act against the parents. Liang makes no love vow to Zhou and contemplated no secret marriage. And all he did was to ask the permission of his own parent to marry Zhou and become seriously ill after he knew there was no hope. There was no love in first sight. The whole episode took a long time, at least 7 years, to complete. The Ma family was, after all, not bad or vicious. They even reported the story to the emperor's court for recognition. The only trace of any romanticism was perhaps a butterfly legend, but it was only later added to the original story. The modern melodramatic rendition of the story tells otherwise. The Ma family is indeed the valiant who stopped the love affairs of Liang and Zhou. If we discard the romantic frame of reference to understand the story and return to our original text, we should discover the love manifested between Liang and Zhou was nothing extraordinary. It was more conservative and moral in nature. The idea of individuality and personal freedom were unknown to them. We can take a look at that. There's also no idea of individuality in the Chinese philosophy. The individuality, individual, never existed in the Chinese mind before, I think, the 20th century. Everyone was defined by the relationship. I am the husband of my wife, a son of my father, the father of my son, and the teacher of a student. Everyone was defined by the relations, interrelation to relationship. There's no self-identity, no individual. So the kind of individuality is completely absent in the Chinese mind. So the overarching principle of morality in traditional Chinese culture is the appropriateness and correctness. For a learned person, learned scholar like Liang, the essential obligation is to see whether one's behavior abides by the moral order. Recognizing the mutual love between him and Zhou is one thing, but to develop this love into marriage is another. Marriage is considered to be no private business between individuals, but between families. Consent and approval from parents are to be strictly observed. The tragedy of the lovers lies exactly in the conflict between the mutual recognition of love and parental approval. Since Jude was promised by her parents to be married to the Sun Dun Ma family, it could not be changed, simply because any change would intimidate the honor of Jude's parents. It was sheer bad luck that Lang could not come earlier for Jude before the marriage was arranged. So I mentioned earlier that the Lang Jude story was classified under the category Qing Ling by Feng Menglong. We shall now come to the meaning of this story according to him. What Feng value is certainly not a romantic ending in the transformed butterflies, but a persistence of love that endures all suffering and finally survives even death. It is indeed most unfortunate to have an unconsummated love because of other moral duties, but it is of utmost value to preserve this mutual love. Feng elaborates the meaning of Qing Ling in the commentary to this chapter. People might live because of Qing and could die also because of Qing. However, Qing does not live because people live and does not die because people die. People live, yet Qing could die. And when people die, Qing could live again. Even though the body cannot resurrect, Qing does not simply perish. The unfulfilled wish before death will be fulfilled after death. Whereas the unrealized hope during the previous life will be realized in the next life. Hence, it's obvious to understand why Qing be called spiritual. The mutual love Qing between Lang and Zhu clearly illustrates the spiritual quality. It survived even death, and the end of this love is to be together forever. Qing is something which binds two lovers forever together. Such is the simple meaning of love in the Chinese tradition. The 24 categories of Qing under which Feng classified his all love stories does not mean that there are 24 kinds of love. There's only one Qing, yet it is manifested in 24 forms of relationship. What Feng wants to achieve in the Qing Si is twofold. The first thing is describe the primary importance of Qing by quasi-theoretical formulation of the nature of Qing in the form of Buddhist verse. The second purpose is phenomenology of Qing, manifested in 24 forms of concrete living and material experience between people or other beings. This implies that Qing does not necessarily exist only between men and women, but also between homosexuals, between people and ghosts, God and even animals. Or the primary importance of Qing, he said, if there is no Qing, in the quotation, it says that no Qing in the heaven and earth, there's no life. If there's no Qing in all living beings, there's no generation of life. There's no destruction of life since Qing never dies. The four elements are all illusion, but Qing is only reality. Because of Qing, strangers become close relatives. When Qing is absent, close relatives become strangers. A great difference exists between the presence of Qing and the absence of it. I would like to establish the religion of Qing so that I could teach all people. The son of Qing for their fathers, while the minister of Qing for the emperor, all other phenomena can be derived from this, and this should be so considered. All things are like separate coins, and Qing is a threat. Hence, the separate coins are threat through Qing, as dishonest, distantly separate people are so joined as lovers. If harm is done by someone, he's hurting his own Qing. Like watching flowers blossoming in spring, we are blessed with happiness. Consequently, there is no theft and no conspiracy, no need for the passion of Buddha, nor any kind of need for the beneficence of the sage. If Qing is lost, cosmic chaos is the result. Unfortunately, I have too much Qing, while others have too little. I do hope all people who have Qing join hands in demonstrating this phenomenon. This is a quotation. According to Feng, Qing is the ultimate cosmological reality from which all life and the generation of love are derived. All human relationships are possible only because of the presence of Qing between them. Without Qing, the universe is back to chaos. Qing is therefore something which bestows meaning and value to human life in relationship. For Feng, this question of original Qing does not exist. Qing defines definition because simply there, the evidence of Qing is seen through its function in the human world. Suffering, happiness, joy, sadness, sorrow, anger, jealousy, perversion, indulgence, chastity, and virtue, all these human phenomena are the result of functioning of Qing between human beings. All Qing stories collected in Qing Si are therefore concrete illustrations. However, there's an educational purpose of compiling all these stories. Through these stories, one may learn the moral consequence and finally understand the meaning of Qing in one's life. In the preface, he said, the book begins with a chapter on chase, so that with righteousness is admired. Affinity follows, destiny is understood. Through privacy and richness, happiness or the sexes is enjoyed, where through vengeance and remorse, then repression, ventilated, and so on. In this commentary, the first chapter on chase, Fan contrasts morality and Qing in the story and concludes that Qing is more important than morality. He said, the common confusion understands that Qing could be regulated through morality, before realizing that in fact, morality requires Qing to sustain it. Accordingly, moral duty without Qing is hypocritical, if not void of meaning. On the other hand, Qing can only be manifested completely and perfectly if it is confined within the moral order. With this idea of love by Fang, the tragedy of Langzhi is readily understood. There is no conflict between Qing and moral duty. There is a conflict between Qing and moral duty. In this mundane world, morality triumphs. Therefore, Qing transcends morality and completes itself through wielded togetherness in death. Now, come back to Romeo and Juliet. Unlike the story of Langzhi, which is basically moral and conservative, Romeo and Juliet is about passionate love, which is at the same time rebellious and transgressional in nature. Dennis de Rochemont in Love in the Western World put the story within the developmental history of the Tristan myth since the 12th century, the legend of Tristan and Isolde, an adulterous love, which origin is unknown but is believed to have been formed in the 12th century and later publicized through the Troubadour in Southern Europe. Is considered, and by Dietrich Wachmann, as a primal model of the subsequent passionate and romantic love of the Western tradition. From Shakespeare, Romeo and Juliet, to Wagner's Tristan and Isolde, and Leo Bernstein's West Side Story, the Tristan legend functions as a prototype. The story is more than just a legend. It's a mythic characteristic that has been determining the Western mind over the last 700 years, Dietrich Wachmann explained. The myth, Tristan myth, operates whatever passion is dreamed of as an ideal instead of being fear, like a malignant fever. Wherever his fatal character is welcome, invoked or imagined as a magnificent and desirable disaster instead of as simply as a disaster. It lives upon the lives of people who think that love is their fate and as unavoidable as the defect of the love portion is in the romance. That is worked upon powerless and ravished men and women in order to consume them in the pure flame. Or that is stronger and more will than happiness, society, or morality. Dietrich Wachmann is extremely critical of this genre of passionate and romantic love. It's because in the final analysis, all the exciting, turbulent, and tragic love are but a kind of useless, self-consuming passion. What the passionate lover wants in the love is not the completion of love in the form of marriage or happy ever after ending, but the continuation of the feeling of love and feeling and being in love. So paradoxically, the passionate lover do not love each other. What they love is love and being in love. Neither do they aim at happiness because they welcome suffering, which is in the final analysis the essence of passion, obstacles and conflicts. Whether they are intrinsic or self-created, are the fuel necessary for the burning of passion. Death is the ultimate goal toward which the lover moves and by dying consume their passion in eternity. Hence, this is the meaning of the concept of Niebuhr's thought. The transgressional and rebellious nature of passionate love lies exactly in this. While the lovers believe that their destined and fated love is unavoidable, even though they know assuredly that death is forbidden, impossible, and sometimes immoral. They vow to stay by the love. In so doing, they set the whole world against them. Treason and insult committed adultery, and in the 12th century, where Christianity was still reigning, they committed a grave sin. Thou shalt not commit adultery. It's prescribed in the 10th commandment. The family Capulet and Montague were aging or aging old families. Therefore, Romeo should not love Juliet. But the emotional seizures of love render the lover blind as they are led by the destiny into the sargassum of passion. They consider everything that is obstructing them to be meaningless, be it family, friendship, morality of religion. Only through death could they get out of this curse. However, there's a deeper meaning of transgression. The idea of love in the Western tradition from Plato to the Middle Age is dominated by Eros, Philia, Agape schema. According to this schema, the true object of love is never an individual passion, but truth, good, and beauty. Passion, as portrayed by Plato in Phaedrus, is the irrational element which must be saved and transformed by reason. And in Symposium, Eros is defined as the desire for the permanent possession of the good, the beautiful, and ultimately the desire for immortality. Aristotelian philia does not include emotion or pleasure as essential element, but virtue. And accordingly, only between virtuous men can there be true philia. Agape is the unconditional love that God bestows on men. Beloved, let us love one another, for love is of God, and he who loves is born of God and knows God. And further, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Love does not wrong your neighbor. Therefore, love is fulfilling of the law. In short, the dominant ideas of love before the Middle Ages is intellectual, virtuous, and religious love. It's no wonder that the idea of passionate love is in every sense reaction against this classical love. While the latter emphasizes the objective, universal, and general nature, the former takes the subjective, individual, and particular as issue. Of course, the idea of passionate love takes a long history to develop. The second volume of Ivan Singer, Nature of Love, is devoted to outline the genesis of passionate love through the development through the courtly love in the 12th century to the romantic love in the 19th century. According to Singer, the criteria for courtly and romantic love do have common characteristics, despite controversy still present in defining the true love, to formulate five criteria. Sexual love between man and woman in itself, something splendid, an ideal worth striving for. Love ennobles both the lover and the beloved. Being an ethical and aesthetic attainment, sexual love cannot be reduced to a mere libidinal impulses. Love pertains to courtesy and culture, but is not necessarily related to the institution of marriage. Love is an intense, passionate relation that establishes a holy oneness between man and woman. With the classification of the idea of love both in classical and the passionate sense, we can return to the analysis of women and children. It is clear that the love in question does not fall in any of the categories of classical love. Aristotle would definitely dismiss this pair of youngsters immaturity as a need for moral education. In the Nicomachean Ethic, Aristotle comments, young people are morals too, for the greater part of the friendship of love depends on emotion and then pleasure. That's why they fall in love and quickly fall out of love, changing often within a single day. But these people do wish to spend their days and life together, for it's thus that they attain the purpose of their friendship. We should remember that between Romeo and Juliet, he was still before Romeo met Juliet. He was deeply involved with Rosaline, whom was immediately forgotten when he was struck by the beauty of Juliet. The whole series of events from falling in love to committing suicide cover less than a week. When we got the ground for their love, except they were attracted to each other sexually and emotionally. The meaning of Juliet's balcony confirmed the overwhelming mutual desire for each other. They believed that they were destined to be lovers. Call me beloved, and I will be new baptized. Henceforth, I never will be Romeo. With this pronouncement, they put the whole world against them, and their fate was then sealed. Through such challenges to law, secret lovers come close to madness. They are ready for crime. So commented psychoanalyst Julia Kristeva on the act of the passionate lover in the book Tales of Love. The condition for sustenance of love is the presence of the third party, Kristeva echoed in the Devotion in this respect. The shadow of third party, relative, father, husband, or wife, in the case of adultery, is doubtless more present in the mind during carnal excitement than the innocent seeker of happiness together are willing to admit. Take away the third party and the whole construct often crumbles, lacking a lack of desire and having lost some of the passionate things. With this assumption, all the subsequent events, the secret marriage, the duel, and finally the suicide of this pair of lovers were understandable. If in this case, that this fat, passionate romantic love of Romeo and Juliet is but an emotional excessive madness of two adolescents, then what is the reason for a powerful infant on the Western consciousness of love? Is there any positive meaning in passionate love besides the discarding as a self-deception by Stendhal or mere sexual neurosis by Freud? I think that the lasting contribution the idea of love exemplified in Romeo and Juliet and other Romeo and love are the recognition of the self as the individual's subject of love. Exactly because the classical love in Eros, Philia, Agape tradition aims at universality, perfection, and immortality. This renders any humble individual impotent in the search for love. After all, normal people are weak and fragile. The demand for intellectual pursuit of the truth and the good is too idealistic and most common people for most common people. However, the sudden awareness of falling in love and transforming the lovers, the overwhelming power, albeit a self-deception one, generated from the passionate union of lovers of love, isolated the lover from the rest of the world. They become themselves. Each lover identify himself as a unique particular person in front of the beloved. But the particularities of two individuals paradoxically dissolve into the universality of love. That's why, when often passionate love is compared with the mystical experience of the union with God by the mystics of the Middle Ages. With love, light rings did not override their walls, for stony limits cannot hold love out. And what love can do, that dares love attempt. Henceforth, Romeo has acquired the greatest happiness and power that any single individual can have. By giving himself totally to Juliet, he gains her totally in return. The complete union, the wholeness, is exactly the idea of love expounded by Aristophanes, whose idea, though is refuted by Socrates later in a dialogue, in Plato's Symposium. Love is the desire for the whole. This is where happiness for the human race lies. In the successful pursuit of love, in finding a love whose part of our original self and in returning to the former state. The tragedy lies, unfortunately, in the polarization of this union and the rest of the world. Any insoluble conflict and an obstacle will remain and will not be disappear, though they are temporarily suspended. Apparently, there's only one answer. Only in death can the wholeness be petrified. Death is the final analysis of passionate love. Therefore, indeed, Christopher referred as the final orgasm. After all, passionate love, whether in the courtly or romantic tradition, is not completely new. Its meaning goes back to Aristophanes' myth in the classical Greece, the myth of the separated whole, seeking for the lost other half, reappear only in the Middle Ages in the form of passionate love. From above analysis, we may agree that the watchman that, as far as the idea of love is concerned, there are two worlds. It is clear that in the traditional Chinese culture, there is no intellectual and religious love, nor passionate and romantic love. Lin Shu, one of the very first Chinese literary translators, rendered the Lamb's Tale from Shakespeare into Chinese in 1904. The story of Romeo and Juliet was translated not just in the Chinese language, but in a way into Chinese culture. The love scene between the lovers were rendered in a very subtle way. The common word for love, I, did not appear yet in Lin's story. I suspect that the introduction to the words and phrases of love, such as 我恋爱, 爱情, or I, used as verbs like 我爱你, should be after 1900 and before 1918, and Lu Zhen, a new poem, The Goddess of Love, was published in 1918. Since that time, Chinese culture underwent tremendous changes. The May 4th movement, 100 years ago, was not only just an outcry of science and democracy, which were believed by Chinese intellectuals of the time to be the answer to the modernization of China, but also a cultural revolution to the Chinese mind. The active introduction of the Western culture by the Chinese intellectuals aimed at transformation of the traditional Chinese way of thinking and feeling into what they thought to be modern, so that the emancipation from the conservative bondage of the past could be achieved. Love is one of the major categories of change. Liao Fan, one of the scholars from Harvard, points out in the importance of the Western meaning of love in that period, he said, love had become an overall symbol of new morality, an easy substitute for the traditional ethos of propriety, which was now equated with external restraint. In the general temple of emancipation, love was identified with freedom, in the sense that by loving and by releasing one's passion, and energy that the individual could become truly a full and free person. Such an idea of love is clearly not the traditional idea of Qing, but essentially the meaning of romantic love in the Western sense. Hence Li referred to that Chinese intellectual as a romantic generalization. I believe the romanticization of Chinese Qing began in this period. Since then, moral virtues are no longer seen as the fundamental constituent or idea of Qing. Instead, passion and romance become true meanings. Interpreted from this perspective, it is no surprise to see that the modern version of legend of Liang Zhu does not have the classical meaning of Qing, but is regarded as a romantic story similar to Romeo and Juliet. As a conclusion, the idea of love is truly not a modern invention. It comes from a long tradition of Chinese and Western culture. Indeed, love is considered very different in both traditions. The West interpret love primarily from the Platonic eras, while the Chinese consider love in the terms of Qing. There may be a lot of difference in the meaning of certain concepts of Western Chinese philosophy. So the concept of law and father, humanity and justice and yi. Let's leave a well discussed in both philosophical traditions. However, this is not the case with the concept of love. For the Western philosophical as well as the cultural tradition, love is one of the most important themes. In Greek mythology, love, either in the form of Eros or Aphrodite, is a power deity that accounts for the creation of the universe and passionate relations between the deities and the mortals. Plato, in Theory of the Dialogues, Lysias, Nicias, Phaedrus, and most important of all, Symposium, established a definitive ground for all subsequent philosophical discussion of the problem of love. Later, all important Western philosophers after Plato philosophized on love. It is indeed no coincidence for the very term philosophy to have its etymological meaning of philia, sophia, the love of wisdom. When it comes to the Chinese philosophical tradition, it's remarkable to notice that love has never been a hint at all. Indeed, Confucianism discussed love in a very broad sense. Ren could be an equivalent to the Western love. Nevertheless, love in the sense of interpersonal with love between man and woman is hardly discussed in the major text. The Maoists talk about universal love, but not sexual love. The Taoists have no interest at all in the topic. On the one hand, love is the most important theme in Chinese literature. For the Book of Song on what numerous love poems and novels are written, it generally agreed that love in the Western tradition means at least the three things: eros, philia, and agape. Eros love primarily translates desire, sexual love, and simple love. Philia as friendship, and agape as the love of God or character, especially in the Christian tradition. Among the three meanings, eros is the most profound because of its longer history than the other two. At the same time, eros is also more fundamental in the sense that philia can be seen as a derivative of eros. Agape, on the other hand, entered in a later stage in the Greek philosophical tradition with the introduction of Christianity. In modern Chinese language, love is usually translated as I. Hence, I love you is rendered or I. However, this usage is in fact modern. Nowhere in traditional Chinese literature before this century can one find such expression of love. When Confucian talked about love, I, in Lunyu, that the man of Ren loved the people, Ren Jia Ai, he means caring and protecting, and surely not in the erotic sense. The meaning comes closer to love as agape, yet devoid of any religious connotation in Mozi. Universal love is a fundamental thesis of the doctrine. But when it comes to love between man and woman, the only traditional Chinese term is Qing. We refer to lovers as Qing Yun, people in love as You Qing Yun. Unlike the term of I, Qing is never used as a verb but always as a noun. It indicates a state between person rather than activities. However, the original meaning of Qing do not necessarily have love as a connotation. Qing means Li Ji, feelings and emotion. There are seven feelings: joy, anger, sorrow, fear, liking, hating, and desire. Qing is something innate and does not require learning. It is an external manifestation of the human nature. It is along this line of interpretation of Qing as feeling the classical Chinese philosopher discussed within the context of human nature. Sun Tzu considered Qing as natural feeling, an emotion, he said. The liking, hating, pleasure, anger, sorrow, and joy of the human nature are called feelings, Qing. In similar sense, Zhu Xi interpreted the meaning of Qing pleasure, anger, sorrow, and joy are feelings, but when they are not yet expressed, then they are nature, sin. Suddenly, sense of qing, a feeling, and emotion is consistent in the whole traditional Chinese philosophy. Qing at love is never thematized as a proper philosophical subject matter. The qing between man and woman is only to be described and expressed in literal writing. Numerous poems are dedicated to qing. Hence, we are facing one problem where there is any connection between the philosophical qing and the literary qing. In the philosophical discussion of qing, this is related to the theory of mind. Zhu Xi discussed the interpretation between qing, sin, and qing, in the sense that the mind, sin, in the substance, nature, sin, the content, and feeling qing, the expression. The philosophical qing is employed as a psychological sense, whereas the literary qing refers to the interpersonal relationship. Nevertheless, feelings and emotions are major form expression of person in qing. Joy and sorrow, pleasure and suffering, as well as fear and anger, all vivid expression of man and woman in love. The difference between these usages lies in that the psychological feeling qing is an expression of human nature, but an intense feeling of joy and sorrow, qing is the cause of them. Joy and sorrow are not just simple emotion for the person who are being moved by things among them. They are the outcome from the interpersonal qing of the two lovers. In other words, qing can make people happy, suffer, joyous, etc. Certainly, come to the end. Certainly, it's not true that traditional Chinese philosophers do not discuss interpersonal relationship. Indeed, the major theme of Confucianism is human relationship. The ultimate aim of Confucianism is to propose a harmonious community based on the principle of Yi and Ren. In such community, people are classifying the roles in according with the perspective relation to each other. Between rulers and ministers, father and son, husband and wife, between brothers and between friends are definite duties and responsibility to everyone to act accordingly and to fulfill. Hence, all interpersonal relations are moral in nature. Qing, being a natural feeling, are to be regulated according to the principle of Li, so that they can be expressed in an appropriate manner. Both Mencius and Shunzi, as well as all other later Confucian, are all concerned about guiding human feeling and emotion in morally acceptable way. As far as literary qing is concerned, the Confucian regard literature as an appropriate realm of discourse of human feeling, love included. In addition, they may consider love and qing as a private business between man and woman. It is not a universal gong enough to be philosophized. Western philosophy places great emphasis on rational pursuit of knowledge. Therefore, love, being regarded by Plato as erotic urge for the good and the wisdom, is implicit in the very concept of philosophy. Philosophy is indeed the love of wisdom. The distinction between love and physical sexual drive and spiritual desire stand witness to the fundamental metaphysical dualism of the Western philosophical tradition in driving reality in the mind and body and mind, particular and universal, and finally, phenomenon and nomina, as was so conceived, is metaphysical. On the other hand, the predominant philosophical concern of the Chinese philosopher is morality. Qing is therefore considered as feeling and emotion, unlike that Western counterpart. The Chinese philosopher could not think the urge for philosophization comes from the erotic desire of an individual whose aim is knowledge and wisdom. They place neither epistemological nor metaphysical interest as their priority, but moral problem being the interpersonal, or to be exact, intersubjective relationship, and not even subject matter dichotomy. Okay, thank you very much.